You are listening to a podcast from the New York Oracle Users Group. The information given here is provided on an as-is basis. The presenters, as well as the officers and steering committee of the New York Oracle User Group, disclaim all warranties expressed or implied with regard to this information and will not be responsible for any loss or damage arising out of the use of any information contained in this presentation.
How are you guys doing? We're going to have a break in the middle of this because it's quite a, you know, too much pressure. And I'll have a piece of pizza. To forgive me, I've been pulling like all-nighters all weekend to do an upgrade. So I'm going to be really relaxed, but hopefully not boring at the same time. Anyway, let's get started. Grid control. I'd like to get sort of a feel for who's used grid control so I can tailor the presentation a little bit. Is anybody not used grid control? That's usually the best question. Okay. Wow. All right. Good. All right. And for those who have used grid control, who would consider themselves on the advanced side? Okay. Fantastic. Well, that means I have stuff I can teach, you know? Great. All right. Well, then I'll go probably a little... if I'm going too slowly, someone raise your hand and help me. Say, go faster. If I'm going too fast, tell me, all right? Because I want to get that down right up front. Because I do have a lot of slides, but the slides have, each slide has a reference in the book. So I really give you the slides mostly so you can go right to them on your own in the book and, you know, read more about them. A lot of information at you that I'm going to throw. So don't feel overwhelmed. Just remember, you know, you've got all the notes in the presentation. And I'm also going to, what else? I'm going to be covering pretty much the structure of the book, but I'm not going to be covering the book. So I'm going to be covering the highlights that I think are important for grid control, you know, the things that you should know and some tricks that some people probably aren't aware of. Okay. So grid control, this book was really going to be part of a two-part series. One is using grid control, which is not this book because there's so much to using grid control. This is more installing and configuring grid control, getting it up and going. If you're a consultant, that's really the best, you know, book for you. If you're on, you know, on site full time, you still need to do it, maybe with a consultant. Who's a consultant? Anybody? Okay. And everyone else full time? Oh, no wonder you look not so tired and refreshed and dapper. All right. Well, you'll be able to do this yourself. I think, you know, hiring consulting is not necessary unless you're doing a very advanced configuration. So you should be able to take this on yourself. Who's going to be installing grid control in the next few months? Okay. Who's already installed it at their site and using it? All right. Yeah. Using it, that's the key. All right, so I'm going to divide it into grid control installation and configuration. Let me step back a little so I don't have to keep looking away from you. You know what? I'll do this. grid control installation, I broke it down into architecture, just getting the feel of the entire product, actual design of the product, and HA and DR, high availability and disaster recovery. Of grid control, not of your site and your targets, the things you're going to monitor, but of grid control itself. Okay? Architecture. Grid control architecture. First, you understand what grid computing is, as grid control fits into grid computing. Who knows what grid computing is? You know, give me a brief definition. Yeah.
SMP, you basically have multiple grids, I guess, share this or something on a backbone interconnect that you can share the memory and CPU, so they make a batch process process much faster than you could possibly with a single large SMP machine.
Okay, yeah, that's a good definition. We'll go over it a little more, but I just want to give you the context of what grid control is and where it fits in. And then we'll go into grid control topology. In other words, the actual, you know, elements and components of grid control and how they interact. Then the data flow between them, I'll probably skip that. It's a big slide, which you're going to lose your mind trying to follow in this presentation. And then the grid control versus database control versus application server control. What's the distinction? This book is on grid control. This presentation is on grid control, not AS or DB control. But there's a lot of overlap, so we'll discuss that. Grid computing infrastructure. Well, this is, you know, a pretty complicated design. By just looking at this, who has got this design at their site? They just three tiers,
everybody.
Right? Everybody? Everybody's got rack with ASM. Everybody's running application servers in HA environment. Every single person here?
No.
I'd be impressed. Huh?
It's a client server in tier L. Application.
Yeah, it's really not client server though. I mean, it is, you know, there's a client, there's a server, but it's really three tiers. Yeah. So we've got the database tier at the bottom, of course, storing information. ASM would be, or a product like ASM would be storing, as you said, shared storage, like an SMP product. You've got rack databases on top of that. So you know, you're basically multiplexing your processing across rack. Nodes, and then you've got an application server, a farm maybe, high availability environment where they're individually doing what rack is doing for the database, they're doing for the middle tier. And then you've got all your clients, could be anybody, right? Now, I just wanted to put you in the frame of, whoa, grid control topology, that looks a lot like the one before. You've got a database at the bottom. Right, you've got the middle tier, which is the OMS. I'm calling the database, by the way, the repository database. I'm calling the Oracle Management Repository (OMR), just to make it, you know, easier. You've got an OMS, which is the Oracle Management Service or server, which is the middle tier and built on an AS application server platform. And then you've got the grid control console, the client or agents, they're clients too. They're clients of grid control, right? They're located on your targets, and they upload information to the OMS, which then uploads it to the repository for storage. So if you see those environments, one, two, they look alike, don't they? Well, that's why grid control is built. Web cache, not so important in grid control. Why? Does anybody know? Does anybody not use web cache at their site? Okay. Well, web cache is for, of course, caching information that administrators, or in this case, administrators really, are pulling up. They're pulling up pages. And, well, why is web cache not important? Because everything is pretty much dynamic. Maybe 2% of the information that a console administrator looks at can be cached. Things like header page, you know, the header of the page, or maybe the, you know, the footer, that kind of thing. So web cache, a lot of sites turn it off. And you can go directly through from the agent directly to the HTTP server. That's always the case. The agent never uses web cache. Or the console can go, instead of through web cache, just imagine a straight line through directly to the HTTP server as well. Okay? Web cache can cause a lot of problems in debugging. So if you ever have a problem with, you know, grid control not starting, whatever, just turn off web cache. Go through the HTTP server, and I can explain that if you want, how to do that. But that is a basic topology. Any questions on this? I know there probably will be. What's this? JDBC. You know what that is? JDBC, a thin client. That's how the OMS communicates with the repository. Thin JDBC, right? Java database connection. And the agent communicates with the... everything else is pretty much HTTP, except for JDBC between the OMS and the repository.
Is there XML communication between the agent and the repository?
XML? Well, XML files are used to upload from the agent to the OMS. That's what they use, XML files. And the OMS is an application server from Oracle, so that uses XML files, too, for all their configuration files, most of them.
Is that possible to ask one way to upload the information to different grid control servers?
To a different grid control server. Oh, okay. Good point. We're going to go into that briefly, but you can. This is one environment. You could have another environment, but the twain shall never meet. You're not going to want to have one agent uploading to two different OMSs that are not part of the same environment. Is that what you're asking?
Actually, if you have one target, how many agents can you install for this target?
You generally install just one agent on a target, unless it's a cold failover cluster, in which case you install, you install two, one on each cluster member, and then you install, then you have a third virtual agent that represents both. But that's, we have to talk about that offline, because that's...
One agent.
You don't want to use more than one agent. You can, you know, for a test box, you could put an agent on another port, but why would you? It's just more resources consumed. One agent can do the job. Any other questions?
So if you have a virtual computer, so with Solaris, you'll
have one per virtual server.
Okay, so that's okay.
Yeah. That's, I should mention that too. That's a different configuration altogether. And I've done that quite a bit. A lot of sites, big sites, still using big virtual servers, Solaris or, you know, HACMP. Okay, what's the difference between grid control, database control, and AS control? Can anybody lead us through that briefly? I get tired of hearing myself talk. So, anybody? Take a stab at it? No? Okay, all right. Maybe we'll try another question. I should have made the book dependent on the best question. All right. So grid control is really used for entire site monitoring, right? Grid control, it's like you can monitor anything anywhere. Database control is just for one database, and it comes with the database, Oracle database. And application server control is, what's application server control? Oh, you're tired, just like me. But application server control monitors your app servers, right? It's a good name for it. Database control monitors your database one at a time. App server control monitors really one app server, the one that it comes with. Grid control monitors everything, right? Now, it does not administer the application server. It monitors it. Okay, that's the only thing app server control you need to do with app server control. You need to administer your app server with that. But it does everything else. It monitors your app servers, okay? And it manages them. So here are grid control consoles pointing to an OMS, pointing to the repository, right? And all the agents with all the targets can upload to that. So you're covering the entire environment. Questions? Database control is very much like grid control. There's two groups at Oracle. They're different groups, but they talk to each other. Database control is really being kind of, it will always be there, but it's not really the thrust of Oracle's direction and technology. You know, it's just limited to one database. Can you run them both at the same time? Anybody know? Database and grid control?
Why not?
You could. Do you? Do you want to? I don't know. And you know, people say, oh, well, it's a back door if grid control's down. Well, if grid control's down, just go in with SQL Plus, you know. But I just turn it off. In fact, I renamed the executable in Oracle Home Bin. I renamed EMCTL to EMCTL dot do not use or something, just because I don't want processes out there consuming resources. Any other questions? Okay. Infrastructure design. This is what you've got to deal with the component network latency and bandwidth requirements. And this really dictates how many environments you need. You were asking, I think, how many environments, but maybe not. But some people need more than one grid control environment. The FAA, for example, has 30. They're only in the U.S. Why they have 30, I don't know. I'm hoping to help them with that, to consolidate. But they have 30 separate environments, and they don't talk to each other. But it's because geography is the big limiter. What is the most stringent requirement here? Between the agent and the OMS, or between the OMS and the between the OMS and the repository? Well, you would think, but not really. 300 milliseconds. It's a pretty big latency. Most people can do that across the country, even 300 kilobits per second. That's not a big bandwidth. But it's really here between the OMS and the repository. You got to have 1 gig and 30 milliseconds of latency. That's what gets you usually. Who's working at a big company that has like a, you know, nationwide coverage with servers all over the country? Anybody? Okay, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but I will tell you, if you do ever have to do that, I'll give you a trick on how to spread it out a little bit, and we'll talk about it in a minute. Any questions on this? Okay. Infrastructure design, which is what we call environments versus regional sites. That's my term for it. An environment is one grid control environment that where everything is basically integrated. You could have another environment that doesn't know about this one, and each environment has an OMS repository and agents. Okay. Regional sites, I just call them, they're really separate environments regionally. Okay, that's all I mean. And who is running a grid control for production and non-production? One system, one environment for both, for everything. You have one of each. Okay, that's the second kind, right? Two environments. That's the best practice, but a lot of sites don't do that. They're just not big enough. And grid control is really this orphan stepchild of Oracle, right? You know, that's the last thing people worry about is grid control. They worry more about their databases and, you know, their production applications. Obviously, if you have a production environment that also monitors non-production targets, you might have some unfortunate complications due to the non-production targets, you know, consuming resources that now production needs, and perhaps occasionally you might have a production outage due to a non-production target, you know, saturation of a resource. Sometimes the OMS gets behind on notifications, and if you have a lot of non-production targets as well uploading, you might not get your production notifications, you know. Active versus active-passive OMSs. Are you running an active-active OMSs, two of them, or at least? You don't? No? Okay. Is anybody running two OMSs or more? No? Oh, okay. Obviously, two OMSs is good for high availability. In terms of design, if you want to spread it out a little and you want to use OMSs for both disaster recovery and high availability, what could you do? Well, you could put an OMS at your primary site. You could put an OMS at your DR site. You can make them both active as long as you meet your latency and bandwidth requirements, right? As long as your DR site is and your primary site are both close enough to upload to a repository at 1 gig and 30 milliseconds. And then your standby site is running an active OMS, and it's ready to be a DR OMS, right? A little reconfiguration involved to point it to a DR repository that you would fail over to as well. But that's one way to spread your dollars out a little bit, you know, and use both use two OMSs for high availability as well as disaster recovery. Any questions on that? That might be a little complicated. Everyone understand that? Does anyone not understand that? Okay. All right. I'm just trying to get a feel for whether I'm actually communicating. Sometimes I think I'm dreaming and, you know, like, I don't know. I'm talking to myself. Yeah.
I have a question. At what point does the grid control become necessary or useful?
Is that the question? Okay. Well, do you need to monitor your site? You know, you need to. You want to do it manually, or do you want to write jobs to actually send you alerts via, you know, SMTP or a MailX or something? Go ahead. You know, that's a lot of work. But do you need to monitor your site or manage your site? Yeah, it's a good way to centralize, you know, your management of.
At any level, is there? I mean, if you have a small operation, does that justify you something?
Well, it's free.
Grid control.
Yeah. Well.
Whatever
options. I say it's free, and then I'll say, but, but there. You know, if you want to get some advanced metrics, you know, you'll need the diagnostics pack. $5,000 usually, roughly. I'm not a salesman. I used to work for Oracle, but as a consultant. So. But you're right. You're not really going to spend a lot of money. Now, if you're going to rack it and you're going to put it in a DR configuration with DataGuard, boy, they stab you. And Oracle, I was involved with Oracle sales guys going, I can't believe this. They got to buy a rack license and a DataGuard license just to run grid control. I thought it was free. They can't sell it, right? But you got to buy those licenses if you're going high availability. But then you're really talking about you're spending a good chunk of money to get a high availability environment. But I would run it, even with a few. I don't know how many targets you have, but most people have at least 3 or 4 servers running 10 or 12 databases. Sound right? Maybe. No, not that many? Okay. Or use it for your own edification, so that when you do go to bigger systems, then you'll be ready. But I can, I don't know how you monitor your site. One target, you'll still have to write something. That's something you could propagate to multiple targets, but you got to write something to monitor your target, right? SQL, cron jobs, whatever. Or you're just going to do it manually.
Install the basic stuff for control, it's free.
Diagnostics
pack, tuning packs, that's what we need to pay for.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you really could. Your site, you could run it free. Right? What's the downside?
That was a rhetorical question.
Oh, it was?
With a different level of applications or installations.
Yeah.
I was wondering about when you need something like that.
Just install it on a single server. Everything. Database, OMS. Use your default install. Grid control that exists with a new database. It installs the database for you, the OMS, the agent, and then you can install agents on your targets. That's enough for a small site that doesn't need DR or HA. Real easy to install in that case.
What's the advantage running in active? Do I double my capacity? Or?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Otherwise, you're running in a cold failover cluster. The only reason you do that is if your company dictates CFC. Yeah. Then you're stuck. There's a lot of big, Wall Street firms that do that. They're running, Solaris. Increase your geographical coverage. Well, how can you do that? Remember, OMS to repository is the big. Is the big limitation. So what if you have a repository right in the middle of the country and you got an OMS here? Well, normally people install the OMS, one of them, the main one, with the repository, right? Right here in this server, let's say in Dallas. Well, why not install the OMS in New York? Right? New York. And the other one over here in California, and then you've got one the repository in the middle, then you're spreading out your OMSs so you can still shortest distance, right, to the repository. If you have the OMS with the repository, then you're really, there's no network stringing out, right? They're right next to each other. You can't take advantage of geographical, increased geographical coverage. Does that make sense? That's a good trick if you ever get into a big site. Okay. And assign targets to the closest OMS, because, if you can't do active-active with targets, because targets only need 300 milliseconds. I mean, that's a long latency. You could still, with nationwide coverage, have active-active OMSs where the agents could, one agent in California could point to, agent here could point to an OMS here or the OMS right where the agent is. That way it makes maintenance a lot easier. When you bring down an OMS, if all the targets are pointing to one OMS, all those targets don't have the ability to upload data or metrics or, more importantly, alerts. So it's best to run active-active with two OMSs. You bring one down, you don't have to worry about anything. It's going to upload to the other one.
If you can. If you have active-active and both of them are overloaded and all of a sudden one of them comes down, you bring the other one down because your load just shoots straight through the roof.
Why would they be overloaded? You got two of them. They're load balancing.
Yeah, but one of them goes down, right?
One goes down. Oh,
so
I see.
One of them goes down. If you didn't even plan your capacity correctly, is that this one is only 60%, this one is only 60%, and one of them had a hardware failure, you see 120.
Well, what's the downside to that? If you run them separately with agents pointed each, dedicated, this goes down. You got downed agents. What's the, you know, which is the lesser of two evils? You got to size, you know, you got to size accordingly. You may need three OMSs. Most people only need two. Database 11G, I would not recommend it with Grid Control 10.2. I'd wait till Grid Control 11. When's that coming out? It's been announced, postponed. Why? Now what happened is Larry thought, I'm going to buy WebLogic. Oh, WebLogic. It's a much better app server than App Server. And you're going to all need to go to WebLogic, probably in 2012. They're going to be starting de-supporting App Server. I don't know if you know that. But Grid Control went, you know what? I think the Grid Control group said, I'm going to wait. We're going to wait until WebLogic can be our middle tier for Grid Control 11G. I think that's how it's going. So that's why 11G is still quite a bit off. It's good for my book, so I don't care. All right. So I wouldn't use 11G because it's buggy with database. It's supported to use 11G database as a repository, but it's buggy. I wouldn't recommend it. Infrastructure design. By the way, when we get through this installation part, we're going to take a break. So my goal in life is to keep you awake. What's your name?
Chuck.
So I'm going to try and get your sugar level up, and, you know. We're going to, all right. We'll talk. You got me there. okay. So infrastructure design. What do you do to design your grid control environment? Try and select, how many agent installation methods are there? Does anybody know, roughly? How many ways to install an agent? Take a guess.
Six.
You may as well 86 to 6, right? You 86 to 6. Try and just use one method, right? Who wants to learn 6 methods? And why not use the best method, which is agent deploy? Why is agent deploy the best method? Well, it's really the only mass deploy method. I won't even really go into the other ones, just to tell you what they are. Anybody, give me a few agent installation methods.
Using the run install user interface.
Okay, so interactive.
Non-interactive using the response file.
Silent.
Using the push method.
Agent deploy. Good. Anyone else? We got three more.
Dollar script.
Download a script. Okay. You're talking about agent download, the method? Okay, agent download. That's a pull. Agent download is you download from the OMS and you can pull the agent down from the OMS. That's four. Anybody else? Well, that's interactive or silent. Most of them install locally. Then there's okay. NFS agent, right? Network file system agent, and the sixth one, agent cloning. You zip up your agent, send it over to the other box, unzip it, run a little script to get the inventory right, and supposedly done. I haven't had much luck with agent cloning. It's gotten better, but it's probably fixed by now. I haven't even tried it. Since 10.203, it didn't work. So most people use interactive, but agent deploy, I have a whole chapter devoted to it. The other five, I have another chapter devoted to that. Agent deploy is about 5 times more powerful than the other five. Okay, so it takes a lot more to set up, but once you're set up, what does it do? You can deploy agents to all your boxes at once, assuming they're the same what?
OS.
Okay? So you got to have groups. You know, if you have Windows and Unix, all right, two sets. You need two agent deploys. And you can upgrade them that way, too. So it's really the best of both worlds. Can you install NFS agents through agent deploy? Anybody? Yes, you can. Okay? So that's even better. Agent deploy can kind of cross over to another agent installation method. What's an NFS agent, real briefly, just so you know? Anybody guess NFS agent? NFS is what? Shared storage, right? So you load your agent on one system, an NFS shared storage, which is shared amongst all your targets, hopefully, and then you
run these tiny, you run the configuration files and log files are stored on each separate target, but the main executables are on the single drive. Now that's a nice way to do it too, because then you only have to install your agent in one place for all of your targets. Makes it a lot easier. Now it's going to run on each host. There'll be a separate process on each host, but it's worth looking into if you do it. It's not bad to install. In the book I go over, I let you do it, the entire thing, including setting up the NFS server. Just use one of your servers as an example. Most of the time, though, you want to get your network guy to set up your NFS agent, because what? Single point of failure, right? So you need NFS servers that are usually in a high availability configuration, and that's how NFS is usually built. I wouldn't play with NFS servers unless you're an OS guy. Okay. So the only method that mass deploys, you can push the agents out from the OMS. It pushes them, okay, to all your targets. You probably want to use it for 10 or more hosts. If you don't have that many hosts, it's a pain to set up. And avoid it on Windows. You got to install Cygwin Suite, which is a Unix emulator for Windows, and it's buggy. Not the Cygwin Suite, but it's just a buggy install. I wouldn't use it for Windows. Use an existing user for the agent, if you can. Not a separate one. Now, it's really dictated by your security at your site, right? Oracle. The Oracle OS user, right? If you need to install a separate user for each product, well, then you have to install an Agent 10G user or whatever. But keep your inventory centralized that way. Use one user if you can. Install a cluster agent if you have rack nodes. Is a cluster agent like rack? Is it like, interconnecting two agents that talk and share cache and all that? No, it's not. It's just means you install agents on rack nodes. They're called cluster agents, but they're separate agents. Can you install rack agents on rack nodes in one installation operation?
Probably
not. You want to install agents on rack nodes? Yeah.
Yes.
You don't have to use agent deploy for it. Thank you for guessing. You don't have to use agent deploy.
50-50 chance.
Yeah, well, you use SSH, which is already configured for rack, right, or RSH, and it installs locally and then on one of the nodes, and you make it your master node because it has the inventory, and then it pushes over and installs it on your other nodes. That's nice, right? Install a rack agent. You can install a standalone agent on each rack node, but why would you do that? It's more work.
How will it push on the other one?
Sorry?
Yeah, the cluster.
Well, yes, that's exactly right. The clusterware is what you need because SSH is set up, right? And the clusterware has to be running so that you know, so that the agent knows about rack. Right. Configure the server load balancer to avoid agent reconfiguration. If you can upfront have an SLB like an F5 networks SLB, right? It's a lot easier to just configure it right through the load balancer to begin with a virtual address for the OMS, oms.companyname.com. And then you won't have to reconfigure the agent later in your agent config file, which is called emd.properties, to point to that. If you install it initially to a direct OMS host name, you'll just have to replace it with a SLB virtual host name later. Why not just do it right up front if you're using a load balancer? We'll talk about that in a minute. And can you use an LDAP user as the agent user? That's nice, right? If you could. Yeah, you can. I don't know anyone but me that's done it. But that's just one agent user. That's nice. Sort of like having one NFS agent, right? One agent user is a lot easier to manage. And generally, you can use an LDAP user with an NFS agent. That makes sense. One user, one agent binary centralized place for agent binaries. You can use it with agent deploy, with anything but agent deploy or a cluster agent, because that involves rack and doesn't play well with LDAP, essentially. In the book, I explain how to do that if you ever want to know. Okay, network requirements, install requirements in general. We're almost done with this installation. I'll give you a break. there's network requirements, there's hardware requirements, there's software requirements, and there's pretty much, I just divided into those three. The grid control install manual is kind of complicated and unnecessary. You know, this is a lot simpler. I just make it a little easier to read. Network requirements, do them up front. Who's waiting on your network administrator ever? Who's ever waited on a network administrator to do something? You know, I would hope all of you would have raised your hands, but you know, that's really not, nothing against them. They're just busy, and you're just one of the people that they serve. Get up front, give them the requirements, okay? Have them make open all the firewall ports between your grid control components for installation. And you'll close them later, but let them open them all up to begin with so that your installation doesn't fail. Give them time to change their host name if you need to, and the DNS and the host file so that they all agree with each other. Some people use host name fully qualified, DNS not. You know, etc host first alias not. You know, make them all the same, either fully qualified or not, preferably fully qualified, because you do get, there are some problems with installation if you don't do that. Hardware requirements. Fault-tolerant storage is important for high availability. You would use, at a minimum, you would put the database files on fault-tolerant storage, meaning ASM, generally. You would put the OMS on fault-tolerant storage, at least the shared receive directory or the what we call the receive directory. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But basically, all the places, all the agents upload to this one place in the OMS, right? And you need to put that on redundant storage, because that's where, you know, you lose that and you lose all your notifications and metrics, right? Best to put the whole OMS on the redundant storage if you can. And then the agent sysman EMD directory, that's where the agent files live that are collecting the XML files and the upload files, essentially. So at least those places where you should have redundant storage. Software requirements, separate versus a central inventory. I won't talk much about that because most people use a central inventory. But I'll give you, there's a diagram next. That's why I highlighted here. Do you understand Oracle inventory? Does anybody not know what the Oracle inventory is? Central inventory? Not know? Okay, everybody knows. So you got to decide. You can use a separate inventory for grid control, you know, for each of your Oracle products. A lot of people do that. I do it sometimes. Because you get corruption in your inventory when you have multiple products that not necessarily are different versions of the inventory of the universal installer. So you can get into trouble. But generally, Oracle recommends a central inventory. And you can put grid control there. Make the parent directory consistent across the nodes, just little stuff like that. You know, on your grid control server, your agent home is going to be like UO3 app, Oracle product 10.2.0, EM10G, agent 10G, something like that. Do the same on all your nodes. You know, put EM10G in there so that it's the same everywhere. Make your life easy. Don't put symbolic links for your agent software or your OMS software or even repository software. Grid control doesn't like them. It doesn't really understand them. Sync your OS timestamps. Make life easy there on the log files. And rack nodes need to be synced anyway. If they're more than a certain number of minutes off, they may actually fail, one of them. And run NTP. Does anybody know what NTP is? Anybody? Right. A network time protocol. It syncs all your servers' times for you. And use the same ports for all your OMS hosts. Anybody ever installed two OMS hosts? When you do, you're in for a little surprise. You think they're on separate hosts. They'd install on the same ports. Is that too much to ask, Oracle? Yes, it is, obviously. So you got to, if you want to use the same ports, you got to use the static ports feature. Because for some reason, it says, oh, I installed my OMS on 4889. That's what the port is for uploading to the OMS, okay? And for grid control console administrators to the OMS. But for some reason, I'm going to install the second OMS on 4890. Because, well, the first one's on 4889. And I want to put it on a different port, you know? Why? The two different servers. Why don't you give me the same port? You're driving me crazy. You can tell I'm a little bit, you know. Little OCP there. Okay. What do you call it? OCD. OCD. I'm an OCP with OCD. Yeah. Okay. use a prereq checker in standalone mode to double check all your work, all your requirements. You can run your prereq checker, which is basically a prerequisite checker, which the grid control installer does too. If you want to wait till you install it for it to tell you, oh, you forgot this, then you got to stop the installation, probably kill it, go do something, come back and restart it. Real pain. Got to delete all the files that you install. Do it up front. Run the standalone checker the standalone prereq checker when I show you the commands to do that. Right up front, if you want, say, all right, what do I need to do? It doesn't give you every little thing, and I tell you which ones it doesn't check, so you have to do manual checks too. But I prefer to run it at the end because I want to do all my checks myself, thank you very much. Let it just tell me that I'm okay with the things it knows about, right? I use it more of as confirmation. Easy to run. I won't go into this, but if you want to use a separate inventory, unless anybody wants to see this, this is how you would do it, one of two ways. Great. Okay. Let's talk about high availability and disaster recovery. This is really designed too, isn't it? Right? I'm kind of tricking you a little. One's installation, one's configuration. But this is HA and DR recommendations. There's three parts to this, right? Installation, HA, DR, and configuration. So HA, DR. This is your best architecture, Lori. Lori, right?
Yes.
Okay. Right? You've got active architecture. Right? You got a rack repository with a couple of OMSs running with a load balancer to virtualize them. And the agents come in through the load balancer, they go to a service. OMSs. It doesn't know which OMS it's going to. It doesn't care. It goes through a load balancer to the OMS service. The OMSs take care of which ones, and the load balancer, of which ones get the actual request. Same with consoles. Console, grid control console goes to the load balancer too. So console administrators are also using all the OMSs. And then you've got, so an agent to multiple OMSs. So there's HA there. You've got OMSs to multiple rack nodes using SQLNet. And that's what the... I don't know why I wrote SQLNet there. That's JDBC. So I'm tricking myself. All right. And the repository is racked with ASM. So everybody's covered, right? What about the agents? Are they high availability? No, but you know, if you want to put them in a CFC, a cold failover cluster, you could do that. You could reinstall them. It's not that hard. Back them up, restore them. We'll go into that in a minute. So you install multiple active OMSs. These are the OMS HA recommendations, right? OMS. Multiple active OMSs. Put a server load balancer in front of them. Locate the OMSs appropriately, you know, based on the network constraints. Install your OMS on fault tolerant storage, as I already mentioned. Set up a shared file system loader. Anybody know what that is? Shared file system loader? No? If you're going to do multiple OMSs, do a shared file system loader. You don't have to use a server load balancer for this. What it is basically an NFS server that has all the agent files that are uploaded to all the OMSs. You know, if you upload agent files to one OMS, it has those files. You've uploaded agents, other agents upload to this OMS, you know, it has all those files. What happens if this OMS goes down? You're screwed, right? All those agent files are no longer going to be able to upload to the repository, and you lose that data and you lose those alerts. Well, what if you share that directory where the uploads occur? Then the OMSs go, oh, all right, I'll take care of it. I'll decide, you know, we'll decide amongst ourselves how to upload those, who's going to upload those files to the repository. Does that make sense? Questions? Well, but if it goes down, it's not going to monitor during the time it's down. So you won't have any historical. You basically have to go into if you're using a rack repository, you want your OMS to, we'll go into that, but you want your OMS to upload to both rack nodes, right? So you basically are putting a connect string in like you would as if you were a client. You know, DB01 is one OMS, one database, DB02 is the other rack database, repository, and you put them both in this connect string, right? So it'll be failover and load balanced parameters being, it will be in that file, OMS.properties. You got to configure that. Repeat it? Yeah, okay. So you have an OMS.properties file that when you've installed on a rack repository, you need to go into that OMS.properties file and say, hey, don't just... Usually, these days, I think in most of the OSs, it does add both rack repositories, but it's a connect string for JDBC, connection from OMS to repository. And you have to make sure that you add load balancing and failover parameters if they're not already in there.
Can you use a service name?
A service name? No. No, it uses just the typical client load balancing client connection. So you'd say, you know, description equals DB01, you know, with the host port protocol and DB02, and then load balance equals yes, and failovers yes, you know, on or whatever. So you have to, you just got to make sure it's correct, because a lot of the time it doesn't get it right when on the install. You generally, it's, when you're installing, you only specify one of the rack nodes. You can't specify the virtual name for the rack. If there was for virtual, for the rack nodes, there really is no virtual name anyway, right? They're separate. Make sense? No? Okay, we'll talk about it afterward. And then you want to configure the OMS to start up automatically when the server boots. It's supposed to do that automatically, but a lot of times it doesn't work. There's a script in my appendix. You'll see there's scripts that show you. I give you the scripts that the grid control installs in the locations to start the OMS, but you got to modify them. Usually, add start. You know the word start to it. Just buggy, a little bit buggy. Agents usually start up automatically on reboot. And Windows, you know, you set your Windows service for the agent to automatic. It usually comes up. Same with OMS. In that case, Windows is the only place where it works better. All right? Okay. The OMR, the database repository. What do you do there? You use clustering. I'm just going into these things here that we gave you the overview of with that schematic. You install the repository in active, active, or active, passive. You patch to the latest certified database version. Anybody know what version comes default with 10.2.04 grid control? Anybody know? 10.10.10.10.04, I think it is. Why? I don't know. They just haven't gotten around to changing it. So you've got to upgrade to 10.2.1.0.1, and then you got to upgrade 10.2.0.1 to 10.2.0.4, you know. But it's best to do it, because you're going to hit some bugs related to grid control if you don't do that. And it's just easier to upgrade up front. The latest what? 10.1.0.7? Database?
No. Agent.
Oh, agent. No, it's 10.105. 10.205. 10.205. But only for Linux and Windows. Yeah. Oh, did I go through the... Oh, sorry. Select ASM, right, if you can. Abide by your MAA best practices. Who knows what MAA is? Maximum availability architecture, right? There's a lot of best practices there that apply to grid control. Get the white paper on it. There is a max availability architecture best practice for grid control, and it includes basically the things I'm telling you. So get that paper, download it from OTN. And configure OMR database startup on boot, right? Now, if you're running rack repository, that's going to start automatically, right? The clusterware takes care of that. You got nothing to worry about. If you run a single instance database, do you want to use the DB start, you know, built-in database instrumentation to start the database? Yeah, you could, right? That's going to be the first thing you want to start before the OMS. Or just configure it yourself to start. Agent, HA. Well, a lot of people don't worry about that, but if you're going to, In the sense of if the agent fails itself, you just install another one. It's not that hard. You'll lose your historical data, though. So if you're really into historical data, I would back up your agent. We'll talk about that. But in terms of HA, the agent is going to communicate through an SLB. That's the best way, server load balancer, right? So it can get to multiple OMSs and not go to just one OMS and be screwed if that OMS is down. You're going to set up agents. If you are using CFC, you can put them in each of the active and passive nodes, and install your agent on fault tolerant storage. Redundant notification, that's something most people don't catch. Let's say you have one SMTP server, right? On install, you specify that. Well, if it's clustered, you're good, right? The SMTP server takes care of virtualizing itself. But if it's not, why not throw another SMTP server in there as well? Because otherwise, you don't get your notifications, right? If your SMTP server goes down, you're not going to get your notifications. So put two of them in there if you have them. You'd have to do that after you install. You have to go into the into grid control UI and add it in the user interface, and then test your agent restart on failure. Just make sure, kill your agent process. This could kill -9 or whatever your EM agent. See if it comes back up. Just check the watchdog. Watchdog is always running. It's automatically built in. It should start the agent for you. It's nice feature. Restart it. And verify that it starts on boot, right? If you have a server that reboots, your monitoring goes down unless your agent will restart, and it's buggy the way they have it. It should automatically work. It does on Windows, but not usually on Unix. Questions on that? Sorry. Okay. Grid control, yeah?
You have kill over. If you have a full kill over cluster. Wouldn't want it to start up at boot, and at that point you want to have Veritas.
Yeah, Veritas. Yes, that's a good point. Veritas would start them, because you don't want them both to start. You only have one up at a time. Nice ringtone. All right, DR recommendations for grid control. This is the overview of DR. Boy, it's sure small from back there. Let me just give you a... Can anybody not see that? You can come up if you want. Sorry about that. I'm going to break that up next time. You've got agents, right? This is disaster recovery. You've got two sites, primary and standby, and you've got a data guard configuration between your primary rack repository, hopefully, and a standby rack or single instance repository. So if your repository goes down, your data guard standby becomes active. And you can even manage these as targets in grid control, set up grid control management of data guard. Get alerts for when data guards, things happen in data guard, like archive logs aren't shipped or whatever it might be, or applied. The OMS, what do you do there? Well, you have an OMS at the standby site. Remember I said it can be active too, but put it at the standby site. So if you have an outage here at your primary site, you're covered. Two SLBs, well, most people can't afford them because each of them has to be usually, you have to have in a pair. So they're expensive. F5s are, $30,000 for a couple of those. Most people don't have the luxury of that standby server load balancer. But big site will. Otherwise, it has to go through this one, single point of failure, unless it's paired. But if they're at a primary site that has a disaster, then you're screwed, right? How do you get to your standby site? So you really want to do that. Agents upload here, but if it goes down, they upload there. That's DR, right? I'm going to go into a little more detail, but any questions on general idea? Who's running DR site? Who has a DR site? Most everybody, I would hope, right? Okay. A lot of people don't install grid control at the DR site. And then they have to scramble and install grid control if they do get into a DR situation. And you got no monitoring. Well, what's the point? You just had a disaster that you really do need monitoring. So set it up if you can. So physical standby database, data guard observer, I would use that with caution. That automatically fails over your database if it goes down. What happens if it doesn't go down but something goes wrong? It automatically fails you over and you're like, no, I didn't want you to fail over. So I don't really like using that with fast start failover. But if you're at a big site that needs automatic quick failover, well, you may have to install it or configure it. Data guard broker. Anybody know what that is? Data guard broker? No? Okay. DG broker equals on or true, I think it is. It's an IP or a parameter. It just means you get to use the GUI. you have to use grid control GUI, okay? Within the grid control UI, there's data guard, you know, this data guard capability, and that gives you, and also it'll let you put yourself in a data guard configuration. Otherwise, it's just a standby database. Data guard, it's really part of data guard, but it lets grid control manage through the GUI. Redundant OMSs, replicate your shared receive directory at the standby site. Remember what I said, shared receive directory, right? Well, if you have a replication here, then all those files that were in the OMS at the time of failure, if they were replicated, you're covered. It'll just upload to this OMS. They'll upload from this OMS to the repository, right? They're already at the OMS level. You can even do fast connection failover and ONS to automate a switchover, but that's a little complicated. I wouldn't recommend that necessarily. But you do, you know, it's nice to have a trigger to trigger your OMS startup automatically if your repository starts. If you get your repository, you know, if you start it manually, you do want your OMS, standby OMS, to come up. You wouldn't ever start that with this OMS. So why not put a database trigger in there to say, hey, start my OMS for me. And I have it in the book, the code to do that. It's real easy. So the OMR, repository DR, simple. You put a standby database in place, use the broker, and configure, if you really need it, the fast start failover with the observer. An observer is, by the way, is usually on a separate box than the primary and a standby database. It's observing and saying, oh, this one's up, okay, things are good, primary's up. Oh, it went down, I'm going to now start the standby. It controls the primary and standby behavior. Okay, OMS DR is installing a standby site, an OMS, excuse me, standby site. It can be online with the primary, hopefully, or offline. I'm waiting to go online to point to the standby repository, right, if needed. I prefer it online, just, you know, more for your buck. Use your standby server load balancer. Replicate your shared receive directory, right? You can use a cron job with RDIST or whatever. Set up your shared file system loader at the standby site, just like you did at the primary. Shared file system loader, remember, is what you have one location, NFS server, that shares the files that the agent uploads, right? So set that up at the standby site, too. Even if you have just one OMS, well, maybe not, right? If you have two OMSs at the standby site, you'll set it up. But with one OMS, you know, there's only one place for it. Trigger your standby OMS startup from the standby OMR startup. I just said that. Agent DR, you could just not worry about it, which is what Oracle says in their install guide. They have one page for OMS and OMR DR. It says, just reinstall. Oh, okay, so I lose all my target, historical data, I lose everything? Just reinstall? Thanks a lot. No, I think I'm going to put a DR agent out there and, just leave it shut down or start it up, let it monitor unique targets at the standby site. I don't want to lose my data, thank you very much. You can pre-install that agent and ready to go to start against the standby OMS when ready. Questions? Yeah.
So it sounds like you say the agent stores the historical data, it's not the OMR?
Well, what happens though is the agent goes down, you lose it, you have to reinstall the target.
Those time frames.
Right, everything that the agent was uploading to repository, you have to either go in and delete those targets, because when you install a new agent, it's not smart enough to say, all right, I'll take over. Stupid, right? Bad design, my opinion. It's something I harped on with Oracle with development, but they maybe in 11G are going to address that. It doesn't make sense, right? Put another agent there with they're just processes, but you have to delete the targets because it has to discover them itself. It has to, you know, be in charge, so to speak. You could probably finagle it to not discover targets and then what? Discover them, but they're duplicate targets? Yeah, no, it's not worth it. Just pre-install another one. I think we got that, right? Any other questions? Okay, notification rules. I'm not going to go through this, but this, I will just breeze through it to show you that everyone's always asking, well, I didn't get that alert. Why not? You know? Well, it went wrong somewhere. Either when in your, here's your trigger, right? I got an alert. All right, I'm sending you an alert. Well, do you have a threshold for your metrics? Do you have notification rules set up so that the target's part of your rule? Is the metric defined there in that notification rule? Is it, or the policy violation? And then, is the email notification checked? Any of those things break down, you lose your alert. You won't get it, right? And then down here, wait, the schedule. I forgot. Our notification suspension set? You know, this has been all notifications. Oh, I forgot to unset them. You know, I was doing something. I forgot to unset them. That's why I'm not getting any alerts. And did the event occur during the schedule for the administrator? If it doesn't occur during your schedule for your particular administrator, you're not going to get it. So it could break down a lot of ways, right? But if you understand the flow, it ain't a big deal. Jobs, same thing. Jobs can be notifications too. Usually I do suspended and problem jobs. I don't want to know when a job succeeds. That's the old days. Oh, I didn't get my job succeed message today. It must be down. No, that's not how it works. Just send me exceptions, thank you very much, right? I don't want to know when it works. Questions? We're going to go into it now, briefly. When you do notification rules, this is the one time one of the times you want to log in as sysman. Usually you want to be your own administrator, have your own, you know, name or whatever, but you want to be sysman here because public rules that you define are removed if your administrator is removed. You won't care because you just quit the company or got fired, but the next guy is going to be like, oh, I got to redo all those rules because I don't want to be Joe Blow, you know. I want to be my name. And you can't change the administrator name, so use sysman for the benefit of your descendants. Use system-generated rules only as templates. Don't change the system-generated rules. There's a bunch for each target. Just copy them. Create like. Do your own thing with them because you want them as reference in case you screw up, right? You want to have something to come back to. You don't want to use them, but you want to have them as templates. The general page, I don't really go into this because it doesn't make a lot of sense unless you're looking at the UI. So I'm not going to really go into this. But you have pages for notification rules. The main thing is you want to make the rules public and you want to be notified if it goes up or down, the target. If it goes down, definitely want to be notified. What about if it goes up? Well, I prefer to do that. And let grid control tell other administrators that it's back up. It's supposed to me getting on the phone or email and going, hey, it's back up. No, let grid control tell them. I don't want to have to call them, unless I like, you know. And let it tell you about corrective actions that work or don't. That's the one time I want to know that they work. All right, so tell me they worked or if they didn't work particularly. Right? Corrective action is, does anybody know what that is in grid control? Corrective action? You can configure grid control quite extensively to say, all right, database goes down, restart it. Corrective action. Listener goes down, restart it. You know? You can do multiple things, you know? You actually go between targets. Restart this, and, you know, this goes down, this application has a database, then from start the database, start the application, you know, you can just daisy chain them. So it's very configurable. Questions on this? These are notification rules. This is the toughest part. I'm going to try and make it easy for you because people, it's just not well thought out, the documentation in this regard. Because you've got all these alerts that you define for targets, right, metrics, and then you've got all these rules. And, well, do you define all the rules for every target so you don't have to worry about them? That's what I do. I don't want to worry about, oh, wait, I got these metrics for this target, so for that target over here on the rules, I want to make sure I have the same things defined. No, just define everything here and let it be limited by the metrics you define for each target. So anything that fires will be notified. You understand? Make sense? See, what you have to kind of know grid control to know this, but if you send some people don't understand that, but this is important. You're going to go in and in notification rules, you're going to check everything. Say, I want every metric that is ever going to be defined to notify me. Because why? It has to be defined as a metric for the target. You had to do it. You want to know about it, right? So you define that metric here, or that policy. You want to know about it. Why would you define it otherwise, right? Does that make sense? So just open, just make this wide open. Say, all right, anything I get, I'm going to send along. I don't want to, The only reason you would use notification rules and start really configuring them for certain targets is if you have what? Multiple administrators managing multiple targets. And only certain administrators are responsible for certain targets, right? Members, right? You get certain production targets, someone else gets others. So that's when you would use rules. Say, all right, I'm only going to have rules for these targets because these are mine. And then they'll have rules for these targets, and the rules will be different maybe for non-production targets. That's the other reason you do it. You have a rule for production targets and another set of rules for non. You don't want to know about everything in the non-production target. Okay? Questions on this?
How do you set up the rule? Sysman or your own administrator?
Sysman. Remember, because otherwise they're public rules usually. Unless they're private. But even private rules, someone else is going to have to take over your private rules when you leave. Or, you don't necessarily aren't the one that leaves. Maybe the manager, and you've got to get the new guy to create the new rules, right? Other questions?
So what type of notification does, I guess, a grid control support? Email, SMB?
Uh-huh. We're going to go over that.
Okay.
Yeah, everything you'd want. Traps. You can interface grid control with other management products. Remedy, HP, OpenView. You can centralize even all the management products into grid control and vice versa.
I have a different question. Just on licensing. If you decide to buy a diagnostic pack, does it depend on the number of servers you're monitoring, the licensing?
No.
But you can have as many databases?
They're cheap, really, comparatively, right? Because diag packs, that's the reason. That you don't have to worry about licensing on multiple targets. They just say, I'm going to charge you $5,000 or whatever it is, probably more now. And, I want my money, but just give me that much. That's good. Grid control is really, if you want to get real deep into multiple targets, non-production, that it can add up because you have all these packs, configuration management pack, application server pack, diag pack, tuning pack. They can add up. I'm not saying they won't add up, but if you're that sophisticated, you're a big company, you're probably going to have the budget for that. But it's not a big number. Anything else? What did I do? I went back? Okay. Metrics, policies, pages. I'm not going to go into this, but you can read about this. Basically, it makes it easier to configure multiple metrics and policies at once. And I have a trick for doing that. All right, it won't make sense unless you're looking at the UI, but that's what that is for. The jobs page, you can set up jobs of all kinds, criteria for the jobs that you want to you want notification on, or just say percent for all jobs. The methods, what are methods, what you were asking? How can you be notified? Most people just use email. It's SMTP server name, port, and that's it, right? But you can use advanced notification methods as well, right? There are basically three kinds. There's and I don't really even use them very much, but we can go into that if you want offline. But there are basically SNMP traps, and OS level, and a third one, I think, Java. Yeah, I think so. And I've never configured except one of them. I did one client. But you can have multiple methods. That's another way of getting high availability for your notifications, right? Okay, agent configuration. Agents are like satellites, right? They're the ones that are at the targets remotely, and they're uploading to these OMSs saying, hey, I'm watching my OMS, I'm watching my target. All the hosts, the host itself, all the targets, the databases, the app servers, anything on that host can be monitored by the agent. How do you configure it? You want to basically take, I'm giving you highlights here, okay? EM client, EM client. Anybody know what that is? EM CLI? Enterprise Manager Client Command Line Interface. There's actually a command line interface. It's not quite ready for prime time still, but you can, if you have multiple alerts and multiple notifications to set up, and you don't want to do it in the GUI, you know, click, 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 click. You just write a little code, and using the verbs that EM command line interface has, it's easy to install, and you can push those out with just one, with scripts. Now, can it do OS shells in SQL? Yeah, but it can't do SQL Plus or Perl or Tickle. It's efficient for one thing. I prefer, I only use it for one thing, preferred credentials. Because for sites that are like every 90 days have to change their passwords, what a pain. But all your targets, and they're all different usually, because if they have 90-day you know, rule, it's usually they have to be different. I don't want to go into the UI and be typing all those. I'm going to have a script. And then on the script, every 90 days, I'm just going to change the passwords. I'll have a, like a little, you know, accept the passwords once. And then they, it's coded so that it'll just change them to that. And I'll show you the syntax for that. There's install instructions. And you download it from the OMS. You just go to that location here, OMS. And you download the EM command line interface and install it. It's very simple to install. There's a separate book on it, separate install manual, but it's not hard. So here's how you set credentials with EM client, right? You have a set credential verb, and you just give it the host. Here's for setting hosts credentials, you know, the host name and credentials, whether they're privileged or not. Here's one for databases, setting up the database credential to be for normal, you know, basically usually DBSNMP user, right, is what you use for the agent database user. So that, there's an example of how to set it. Questions?
Is that done through, because what protocol is it going to? I guess my
protocol?
Security in this case.
Yeah, it's the same exact security as grid control UI. Yeah, it uses the same security rules. You have to have the right roles and privileges set up, or you won't be able to do it.
But the message itself, when you transfer it over the wire,
oh.
Is it going through...
it's going... Yeah, well, I have a whole chapter in the end, chapter 16, on how to set up the data flow between all your components, secure them, how to secure it.
Okay.
It's usually, it's basically... you're using secure shell,
okay.
And yeah, it's, it all can be encrypted, and I go into detail on how to test it and everything. Most people don't do it, but it's out of the box. OMSs are uploaded from agents via HTTPS, okay? So that's secure, and it's something called EM framework security is built in, so the OMS can upload to the repository, but that is done via, I'm not going to go into this, I'll just tell you briefly, that's done via the advanced security, Oracle Advanced Security, OAS. And I tell you exactly how to do it in chapter 16. Okay. Multi-bill inventory support. This is if you have multiple inventory. Here's how you configure it so that Oracle Grid Control knows about all your inventories. Okay, so you can patch them. I'll go into that. But how do you enable notifications if grid control goes down? Do you want to know about it if grid control goes down? Well, how do you know? Grid control went down. It can't tell you, right? Yeah, it can. It can. It has something called out-of-bound notifications. In other words, it's not going through grid control, obviously. It's just through the OS. Now, if your OSs are down, right, if your server, your target goes down and your grid control servers go down, you're in a DR situation. But if, you know, if your, let's just say your OMS goes down or your repository goes down and they're single point, you know, they're just, that server fails, you know, water's dripping on your server, you know, it fails. Well, grid control will tell you about it, but you might get, it'll automatically tell you if you are running Solaris and Linux, HPUX, 264AX, that's most of them. But if you're running any other platform, and there are a few, you got to configure it. And I'll give you details of how to basically, it doesn't have MailX, and MailX is hard-coded into the scripts that do this. You got to substitute your own command line mail, SMTP executable. Okay, tuning, metrics. this is the pain. This is why everybody shuts grid control down when they do shut it down, because they're getting all these alerts, or they don't know what to do. They just, oh God, call a consultant, or shut it down. Well, it's a constant process. You're always getting alerts you don't want. You're always turning them off. You're adding others. Generally, you're turning them off, because grid control, Oracle philosophy is, I want to send you everything I know, right? You got to turn them off. Well, it's a pain in the beginning. You're going to get all these alerts the first week, and you're going to go crazy. You're going to say, oh my God, what do I do? Shut it down. Well, what you do is just shut off your notification at the schedule level. Say, suspend, I don't want to know about it by email. I'll go into the console. They'll still fire that way, but I'll look at them in the console for a week. I'll take that job. And you get one of them, you have to volunteer. Everyone else step back, and there's the guy who's volunteering, right? Because it's a tough job, but it's just a pain, that's all. General recommendations, basically, you can add metrics for host monitoring. Most system admins stay away from grid control. There's no reason, though, if they don't have monitoring, that they can't use grid control. It has quite a lot of capabilities. So you can add more host monitoring, and I'll go into that briefly. You remove the frequently firing metrics. You choose all the metrics for the host, OMS, and repository target type. That's a logical target. The grid control says, logically, I want to know if my OMS or repository goes down. You choose every metric. Is that by default chosen? Yes. They're already chosen. You got to remove a few of them because Oracle has a few bugs and saying if it's greater than, it should be less than, and it's hard-coded and you can't do anything about it, so you turn it off. But everything else you leave configured, and you make sure you get notified on OMS going down or repository going down. You adjust your thresholds, you add a flash recovery errors metrics. Those are not automatically added. So what do? You add, I'll give you the string, basically you add Aura, Dash, and all the flash recovery error numbers to your generic alert log monitoring. That's a good way to do it. That way you get those flash recovery errors, because what happens if your flash recovery area, right, which is for ASM, what happens if it fills up for your repository database? Right, it's going to hang. Just like archive log filling up, right? You can't switch archive logs, right? Fills up, game over. You'll get an out-of-bound alert, probably, that the OMR is down, if you've configured it. But you want to set those alerts up. For some reason, they just overlook them. It says they say they're there when you look at the metrics manuals, but they're not. Set all your disk space metrics. What I like to do is under the host side. You could put archive log full and all that under the database targets. But why not just use your host target to set up all your disk space, thing? Otherwise, you're going to have overlapping. Let's say the archive log is on UO3, and you put an archive log metric in there saying when it's 90% full, semi-alert. But you also have host metric for UO3. It's 90% full. Why do you want both, for the same information? Just set them up all on the host. That's what I do. Or on the database, but I don't know why you do that. Because the database, you want to get all your mount points covered. And what else? Add network and rack interconnect metrics. They're not there. There's a few that are added, but you can add those if you need them. Generic, these are the different host monitoring you can do. Sysadmins like this when they learn about it. Most grid control administrators don't know about it. But basically, you can set up generic log file monitoring for your system OS logs to parse any errors that you want, send them to you. You can set up program resource utilization, for memory or processes that consume too much space. Or Dell has a plug-in essentially built in almost that works with the Dell Open Managed Server Administrator. Lots of things. Your temperature on your temperature of your power supply or whatever it is goes up beyond a certain number, you're going to get an alert. It's got fan control, temperature, everything. So Dell is working pretty well with grid control. And then you have generic file and directory monitoring. File gets too big, directory gets too big, or they grow at a certain rate beyond what you want. You can set all that up, but that's all additional. And you have to go to the online help for all that. Online help, it's not in the manual. I don't even really cover it in the book, because you just go to the online help. It's pretty good in that regard. Questions on this? I'm going to give you a few examples, but yeah.
What about monitoring other
Yep. You can monitor that. I've monitored it. There's a couple of tricks. You know, if you want to, you know, email me or whatever, I'll send you a couple of tricks on the SQL Server. There's a couple of bugs there. But you can monitor SQL Server. You can monitor any kind of database, really. Well, I shouldn't say that. Not Informix. not Sybase. No, they don't. They're going out of style, I guess. They're competitors. No, but the Sybase may build a plug-in for it. But you can monitor non-Oracle products, lots of them. App servers, web, you know, all the web servers from IBM's WebSphere, and we'll go, there's a lot. They're called plugins. And there's also connectors to go between management products like OpenView to Grid Control. I'm not going to go into this, but basically here I'm giving you the best practice default thresholds to change. Otherwise, you're going to go crazy, and they, for the reasons I cited above, right? For all these reasons, all right. Here's a generic alert log one, for example, right? For your flash recovery errors, I give you the syntax. It's pain, you know. It's Perl, so it's easy. Just I have a little page on how to do it too, and what the syntax means. But any of those errors will fire. Flash recovery errors will be notified on if you add those. I'm just giving you some examples here. They're not all of them. The book has pretty much all of them. If you don't do these things, you're going to get web cache hits. You're always going to get that, okay? So unset them. Turn them off. Because remember, it's all dynamic. You're not going to get a good web cache hit rate. You're going to just get alerted on that. Okay, jobs and UDMs. A blank piece of paper. This means you can fill out yourself new metrics, user-defined metrics, UDMs. And they're plugged in. They're plugged into the grid control infrastructure, and they're, it's easy. You have a GUI. You know, you say, I want these thresholds. You write a little SQL script or OS script, and you, in a certain syntax, and you pass multiple, one or multiple arguments, and you can get alerted through the grid control system. It'll keep the historical reference, historical metrics. It'll do everything as if it were a built-in metric, right? Pretty nice. Not hard to do. Here's an example, jobs. You can compile invalid objects. Just run util.rp, right? For some reason, nobody does that. I don't know why. I do it at every site because invalids are always happening, and I don't want to have to wait till they're called to be compiled. Purge temp directories. I give you a syntax for that. For an OS script to purge all your temp directories. Those are jobs you can add. UDMs. I have a whole thing in here. I'm giving it to you. In a Word doc, along with this, you can get it from the website, I guess, when you upload it. But how to set up blocking lock monitoring. What's going on at the time of a blocking lock? All the things that are happening. And that's very important for most sites. So I give you detail. It's quite a bit of work involved in all the scripts. There's multiple scripts. So that's a nice little thing you'll get there. Identify tables to rebuild for grid control. You can make a self-monitoring, you know, for grid control. You can do it manually, run a script every month, whatever. You can just have grid control. Put a little defined metric in there every month, run it with this query, and if it's, you know, tell you all the tables you got to rebuild in grid control, right? So I give you an example of how to do that, exact syntax, and it's all in here, actually, but this takes a while. Just to tell you, for database rack, if you purge your temp directory or your var temp directory of anything older than a certain date, you're going to bring your rack down. I don't know if you know that, but you're going to bring your rack down. Why? Because the .oracle directory and the CVU for cluster verify utility, mainly .oracle and the VIP, those are the virtual IP addresses. If you delete them, you're going to crash. Your ASM is going to crash. Your cluster war is going to crash. So I have, here's the syntax to exclude those things. .oracle is automatically excluded because it's .. but that's an example of how to purge everything older than 30 days. There's the command for your user-defined metric. Here's how to set up blocking locks. You can't see it, but I give you exactly how to do it, okay? Here, not in the book. And the scripts to go along with it. Grid control tables to rebuild. Here's this. You can't see it probably, but there's the SQL to run. If you want to know about anything that's grown more than 5 meg, if it's more than 5 meg in size, you don't worry about it if it isn't. And if it's grown more than twice the actual size, you want to prune it. You want to rebuild it. Rebuild the table. This tells you that you're ready to you need to rebuild those tables in grid control. If you don't, performance will suffer. Eventually, it's going to really suffer. I've been to sites where what they do, they monitor with grid control. Like, I don't want to give the names, but if, you know, they'll monitor with grid control, but if, can they log in? No, they can't log into the console. It'll take forever. No, don't try logging in. But we're going to get an alert. Somehow it works. It sends it to us. I don't know. But here, you know, do some pruning. Do some maintenance. Thank you very much. You know, grid control doesn't run forever, you know, by itself. Does a pretty good job, though. Here's how to do it. Here's your interface, right? You can. I want anything more than zero for, this is a grid control tables to rebuild, right? Sysman tables more than twice the actual size. Every 15 minutes, run it. What? No, every month. Every month. And, sorry. I was like, wait a minute, geez, you're going to really overload your system. And, you know, the SQL is in there. So, any more than just one occurrence, right? What's that? Grid control monitoring, grid control, is that what you're saying? Yeah. Well, that's what you're doing. You're doing that. It's a target of itself, right? It manages itself, so each of its components are targets as well. Right? It's kind of weird, but... Okay. BNR, we're almost done. Last section. Can we hang in there, or you want to stop? Okay. I'm not going to blow through it, actually, because there's a lot of detail here. But basically... Grid control, backup and recovery. This is of grid control, not the targets, okay, but it applies equally to targets. Backup recovery is very simple to set up in the GUI. Backup would be used through grid control. You want to back up through grid control, great. Recover through grid control? You want to recover grid control through grid control? No. No. But you could set up the recovery parameters so that when it does go down, you can recover manually, and I'll show you how to do that. Because you got components out of sync when things crash. Like the repository crashes, you know, oh no, my agent's got stuff that my repository doesn't know about, repository doesn't know about, so how do you do it? How do you sync it up again? I'll show you how to reset agents, which is really what you have to do. So you don't clean start them. You never clean start agents. You reset them, and I'll show you how to do that.
Question.
Yeah.
You said UDM. If I configure, say, 20 UDMs, and then you said it's like lots of work to configure it, so... Is it possible that I can take an export of that UDM and later put it in some other configuration or something?
That's what the FAA wants to do. At 30 sites, you know? Yes, but you have to write an extensibility, you have to get the extensibility guide out, crack it open, and write an application. You know? Or do it outside of grid control mechanism. Oracle Consulting turned that job down. They gave it to me because I used to teach the grid control class for them, and they're like, I don't want to do this. This isn't our expertise. They called grid control group, and they said, you do that. Can you take care of that? FAA said that. They said, no, we don't do that. That's not our bag. You want to push stuff out? Why don't you just have a single, global single instance of grid control? And you won't need to worry about it. Spread out your OMSs. Reduce the number of sites. That's a lot easier, isn't it? A lot of people don't realize they can put OMSs away from their repository and spread out double their coverage. So most sites, most places don't need more than one site. So you won't need to do that. Do you need to do it?
No, say like I've done a very good configuration with my company X, so I just want to take...
To another company? Oh.
So as a consultant, I have...
Yeah. Well, you know what? You could use EM command line interface and just set up... You can set up certain things. Not everything, but... You can set up notifications, user-defined metrics, no, but you can set up built-in metrics, you know, thresholds and stuff like that. So, yeah, you can use EM client. Any other questions? Okay. Integrates with RMAN, archive log, flashback, automatic undo, restore points, blockchain tracking, all that can be set up through grid control. You can also set it up manually. This is of the database. Okay, OMR database backup. You're backing up your repository. It has all your information in it. You want to make sure you back it up. I had a guy the last time, he said, well, what happens if I don't have a backup? I don't want to, our company won't let us back it up. I'm like, There's Oracle has Grid Control has built-in Oracle suggested backup, they call it. It's an incremental cumulative built-in. You just plug, you know, it's easy to set up. Or there's a customized backup where you can have a few more parameters to change to set it up. You know, weekly tape backups and disk backups during the week, that kind of thing. But there's some built-in GUI. For those who aren't quite familiar with RMAN or who want to generate an RMAN script and then say, oh, that's how you do that. You may not use Grid Control after all the backup, but you'll know how to write the script. You see? So let Grid Control write the script for you. You know, and go through the GUI and check what you want. Anybody used RMAN's Grid Control backup facilities in, for their site? Anybody, have they played with that? Yeah, most people don't really know about it. BNR is good. And you set up Grid Control to back itself up. You can also, most people like to run their backups through an MMI, you know, like a tape, you know, tape backup. They have to, if you're running tape backups, you have to have a media a management layer, right? It sets up with, it sets, it plays well with MMLs, MMIs, whatever, MMLs, media management layers. You just have to get the syntax right. It also has backup administrative features for like purging archive logs and stuff like that, but that's a little clunky because, you know, it's when you want to just set that up in RMAN client. Here's what to back up. You want to back up the OMR database daily, tape if you can, disk as well. Hot backups are okay, right? All of this is hot. You go to, you look at Grid Control manual from Oracle, it says cold, OMS cold backup. It's a stateless system. No, you don't have to back up the OMS. You don't have to shut down the OMS to back it up. What's changed about the OMS? Everything in the sysmanemd files, directories. You have redundant storage there. You shouldn't lose that stuff. As long as it's redundant, you don't have to worry about bringing it down. But what would, when would you bring it down? Well, maybe just before an upgrade or something like that. You want to get everything synced. And you don't have to worry about resetting agents. Yeah, okay, bring it down for that. You need to anyway. Okay? And you want to have server-level backups, which aren't really through Grid Control, right? That's your OS. Your sysadmins are taking care of that for you on a weekly, daily basis, whichever. Everything's hot. Here's how you back up your OMR database. You set up a recovery catalog. You can't actually configure the recovery catalog in Grid Control, but you point to it. You say, I'm using this recovery catalog. You register the database in the recovery catalog, either with the register database command in RMAN, or you can do it through Grid Control. You configure the backup settings, which are broken up into device backup set and policy pages, and you can go through that yourself, but I have it in this presentation. It's understand that the input is database specific, just like it is in RMAN, right? It's stored in the control file, and if you have a recovery catalog, it's also stored in the recovery catalog. So if you lose your control file, you're set. But it's per database, per target, those settings. Okay, they're not for all databases when you set it up. It's for per database, and you're just setting up. This is the OMR database as an example. You can do the same thing for targets. And they're an effect for all the RMAN backups. They're persistent. It's like running the configure command, right? Oracle remembers that. RMAN remembers that in the control file. Implement a backup method. Well, those are the three. You can have an RMAN script. That's the third one. RMAN script job. That's the most configurable. That just means write your own script or get Oracle to generate it using one of the other two methods, and then you can run it any schedule you want, any way you want. If you really need a lot of configurability, then just do that. It's a job. That way. You set it up as a script job, and there's an RMAN script job type. And then you can set up, I prefer to set up OMR database exports too with data pump, or export, the traditional export. I prefer that. It's just an extra method for logical corruption. You know, oh, I blew away a table. All right, restore it, flash back, you know, grab the table, then, you know, flash forward again, just open it up read-only, whatever. So I like having database exports. Excuse me, I was talking about flashback there. I just confused you probably. Forget what I just said there. But exports, if you have a logical corruption, you can grab a table, import it, right? Sorry. You can use it in conjunction with flashback. Okay. Questions on this? I'm going fast. I'm going to go even faster now. Here's all the pages. I'm not going to go through them, but they're all in here, okay? Advantages and disadvantages of the different methods are here. So, you know, which method do I choose? Well, you know, this is automated, the Oracle suggested one. Simple. There's a wizard. It's easy, right? But then, that's it.